Committee on Judiciary come to order. Today is Tuesday, March 31st, 2009. First item on the agenda today is House Bill 3094. You want to tell us about it?
House Bill 3094 in its original form eliminated the sunset date on the conditional exemption from disclosure of public records, the name, home address, or professional location of a person associated with medical research conducted on animals at OHSU. The Dash 1 amendment, it's in front of you, reintegrates the sunset clause. It extends it for 4 years to 2014, I believe. There are Dash 2s. We received those this morning. They have not been reviewed by the committee, and those were submitted, I believe, by Andrea Meyer. We do not yet have the fiscal or revenue impacts on either set of amendments.
Okay, Representative Edwards and Senator Starr, please.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Does Dash 1 stay in, or is 2 replace 1?
Dash 1s are from the proponents. Dash 2s are from Ms. Meyer.
So they'll both
they're different,
be in?
They address different issues.
No. So 1s will not be in if we accept 2s, or 2s will not be in if we accept 1s.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee. I appreciate the opportunity to speak on House Bill 3094. As you just heard, this is a simple bill to simply extend the current law. And as you may know, over the past decade, research institutions around the world and across the country have faced increasing threats from groups opposed to the use of animals in research, despite the fact that most medical advances rely on the use of animals. So in recent years, animal rights extremists have made their campaigns very personal by targeting health scientists and their families in their homes. Recent actions where OHSU researchers were targeted include costly home and car vandalism, threats to burn down the family home, threatening calls and emails, and loud, intimidating protests at their homes involving masked individuals. House Bill 3094 is the continuation of existing law to limit these types of menacing acts by disconnecting OHSU researcher names from very detailed researcher records when these records are requested by animal rights activists through Freedom of Information requests. It's important to note that House Bill 3094 does not limit access to information requested by most animal rights organizations or individuals concerned about the use of animals in research. Detailed research protocols, animal care records, and other materials remain fully available. However, references to individual researchers are removed from this data because these details are used by animal rights extremists to launch very personal, menacing campaigns directed at researchers' homes and their families. The Animal Liberation Front has twice targeted OHSU researchers at home. The ALF is a dangerous underground organization that takes credit for violent acts against researchers, not only in Oregon, but across the country. House Bill 3094 strikes the appropriate balance between the public's right to access information and protecting the safety and privacy of medical researchers. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Senator Bruce Starr, and I represent Senate District 15 in Western Washington County, and the West Campus of OHSU is in my district as well. Representative Edwards clearly enunciated the purposes of the bill. I won't repeat his testimony. What we really are talking about are separating the research that is done at OHSU and the researchers and their families. And clearly there's the public right to know about the research, but as it relates to the researchers and their families, especially their families, can you imagine a researcher that's got young children at home, a wife or a husband, a spouse at home, they're not engaged in any kind of research. They're not, but they're the victims of this kind of radical groups that are out there to target these researchers. Again, this is a continuation of existing policy. I would urge you to listen closely to the testimony. I think that if you don't pass the bill as is, if you just extend the sunset, I think that is a fair compromise. But it's an important piece of legislation, and it's about protecting families of these researchers particularly. You know, as legislators, and I'm going to I'm going to personalize this a little bit. As legislators, we're used to being in the public eye. We're used to, you know, the give and take of the public arena and discussion. And, you know, during campaigns, things can get pretty personal sometimes. And those campaigns impact our families at times. And it's difficult, and each of us, I think, try to, especially to shield them from the, you know, the give and take of a political campaign. You know, so in a similarly, I mean, if we can take actions, take steps to shield particularly the families of these researchers from having to, you know, deal with really what are kind of scary tactics that some of these organizations use, I think it's appropriate. I'd urge you to adopt the bill, move the bill forward so we can continue this, I think, appropriate policy.
Any questions from the panel? Representative Smith?
The sunset, you mentioned that one way of moving forward would be to reenact essentially the current legislation with some sunset out in the future. Is the current bill, was it a four-year sunset, six-year sunset, million? How many do we know? I forget.
Four-year, but the I think there's amendments that have been drafted to take it out for 2014, so mm-hmm. I think that would be appropriate.
Thank you.
Further questions? Thank you very much. Thanks for coming over, Senator. Appreciate your time. Good bill. Next, Jim Newman, Nancy Hagwood, and Chris Coleman.
We should be sure they're armed, the researchers.
Automatic concealed weapons.
Mr. Chair, please identify yourself for the record.
Chair and members of the committee, my name is Jim Newman, and I am the Director of Communications for the Primate Center. I also serve as Associate Director for the Media Relations Office at OHSU. Today, we want to do a short presentation for you to talk about House Bill 3094, its current law, and we're asking for continuation of that law. Today, we'll demonstrate how we've used the law carefully and responsibly over the years to help protect our researchers. We've never used this the exemption with the press, and we believe we've used it appropriately to protect researchers and keep them from being at greater risk. We will also attempt to practically respond to concerns that have been raised by the ACLU. We'll demonstrate why the continuation of this law is of highest importance, and that's because of the sharp increase of violence and menacing acts by animal extremists. They've been targeting researchers across the country, but especially researchers on the West Coast. And following my comments, you'll also hear from the director of our Primate Center, Nancy Hagwood, and also one of our animal experts at the Primate Center, Chris Coleman. So I have a few short slides to show you, and then we'll move on to our other testimony. One of the questions that's been raised about the bill is how can we have pictures and information on our website while asking for the redactions, and I want to set that case together for you. It is true that we do have a website for our Primate Center. We are funded by the NIH, and we receive some federal dollars. We believe we need to talk about what we do, and we have some pictures, but we also have brief summaries of the research that's conducted at the Primate Center, and of course the names of our researchers there. That's in stark contrast to the kinds of information that we often get records requests for. And this is one example, and I actually have three or four copies of an animal care record that has been redacted. They're very extensive, so I didn't print off a copy for each member, but if you'd like to circulate that, we can do that. This is one page from a typical animal page record. This is page 2 of 32 for one record, and this lists every single location the animal has lived at a primate center. Why this is important information: if somebody wants to break into our center and steal a specific animal, it would tell them exactly where it is. So in this instance, we have redacted the current location of the animal, but we wouldn't redact all of the locations where that animal had lived previously. And here's a typical page from an animal record. It basically is a day-to-day log of how an animal is cared for. If an animal looks like it's sick, there's a notation. If an animal receives a medication, either for a research protocol or because it's ill, that's listed there. And along with these notes are the people who took care of the animal. And so those are the redactions that you'll find within the records. I've marked them in black so you can make sure that you see them. But they're very limited redactions. By no means is somebody being handed a page that's completely blacked out. The reason why that information is so sensitive is that there are current campaigns going on, especially on the West Coast, that are targeting researchers and using these records as the fuel for the fire. This is the webpage for the Primate Freedom Project, which is based in Atlanta, but their number one target right now is UCLA, and OHSU is a pretty close, I'd say we're in the top five of targets. And as you see what they've done at this website, these are researchers that work at UCLA. They've provided extensive information there that was gathered through a number of methods, including through public records. And along the left side of this the webpage, you will see animal care records, which is exactly what they use to fuel the fire. And what they do is they will take these records and sort of dissect them, sort of provide half-truths, and then make it a very personal campaign saying, this person works with this specific animal, and this website is basically saying, go get them. It doesn't say it word for word, but it's clear when you put somebody's picture there, you put their home address, their phone number. There happens to be a researcher on this list who quit his job because the harassment was getting so bad. Another example of the types of ways that information is used to paint very ugly pictures of researchers, here's an example of a letter that's sent out by In Defense of Animals, an animal rights group that's a national group but also has a Portland office. And this was the group that they sent to their membership. And this is the picture that they paint of researchers at our institution. I blacked out the researcher's name to protect him. But as you can see, they refer to the doctor as Dr. Frankenstein, who implants nicotine pumps. They talk about giving multiple surgeries to the animal. Of course, they don't disclose that the animal gets the same kind of care that we would get when we have surgery. At various stages in their pregnancy, this person cuts out their unborn babies and conducts live function tests on them. If you think about it, what that really means is these are C-sections. But, of course, it's painted in the ugliest light possible. And when you name somebody, you give all this information, you make somebody the face of animal research. And it's no surprise that we get lots of threats, we get lots of hate mail based on things like this. So what OHSU has faced in the last couple of years has actually increased in its severity. We've had two animal rights activists planted at the Primate Center as employees. In fact, one of them is in the audience today. We've had two ALF attacks. Those are attacks on people's homes. There's a photo in the corner. I'll show you more. We've had home harassment, over 50 separate incidents of people coming to our homes with masks on, screaming horrible things, screaming, we know where you sleep at night. Our kids are seeing this. They're taking pictures of these people as they're standing outdoors doing this with masks. I'll show you pictures. And we've had dozens of personal threats, threatening calls, letters, emails, calls to our homes, emails to our work. This all started in 2007 when it really started getting bad. We always had activism, but it got really bad starting in April 2007. This is a picture taken at a march that was sponsored by In Defense of Animals. They obtained a permit for this march, and I have a copy of that. In Defense of Animals came to OHSU to hold a protest during this 1 week, and during that protest they held up a sign saying ALF versus OHSU coming summer 2007. I think the threat is pretty clear there. And ALF stands for the Animal Liberation Front. I think most of you are likely aware of that group. It operates just like a terrorist cell. They're small cells of people that operate, do illegal acts such as setting things on fire, threatening people. They've broken into labs. So when this banner was held up at OHSU, we were very concerned. 3 months later, our first ALF attack occurred. This is one of our scientists' homes. His house was spray painted, and the car that you see in the driveway had acid poured on it. Very expensive damage, but even more important, as one of the legislators mentioned earlier, is the impact that it has on you and your family. There's one thing about the cost. That's one thing. But talking to your kids about why are we being targeted like this, it's a very, very difficult thing. And children often say to their parents at our Primate Center, can we move away? I want to get away from this. We don't think that's fair to operate that way. The second attack was in December of 2007. That is December 2007. And this is a researcher's home where both of the cars out front were spray-painted and had acid poured on them. As you can see, ALF was written on the sign. In both cases, the ALF took credit for these actions, but the way they take credit is even more menacing than the act itself. The comments that were posted at a public website were, of course, naming the researcher. We took that name out for his safety. They told him that the next time they come, they will likely use firebombs. In other words, we're going to firebomb the house. I take that as a death threat, if not as close to a death threat as possible. And they also reminded them, we know where you sleep at night. As I mentioned earlier, we have also had about 50 separate incidents of home harassment. That's probably a nice way of saying it. It's a large group of people showing up at your house, wearing masks, holding up signs telling you quit your job. It's basically blackmail telling us if we don't quit our work, we will, which is legal and very well regulated, that they're going to keep coming back and harassing us and our children. finally wanted to close with telling you that this is a problem that's not only faced by OHSU. We're actually probably number five or four on the list. Number one targets on the list are the University of California campuses. Within the last year or so, there have been numerous acts that have occurred there, including the firebombing of a home while the family was asleep in the home. The family had to escape through an upstairs window. Car bombs have been set off. Numerous threats have occurred, and as I mentioned earlier, one of the scientists at UCLA actually quit his job out of fear for his family. They've made reference to these kinds of acts at OHSU. We take those threats very seriously because they've occurred in the past. So that concludes my comments. I did want to make a quick reference to some of the things in the packet that you received. There are a couple articles. One of the article includes an editorial which appeared in the Oregonian recently, and I think really gets to the core of what we're saying here, which is we believe that the public records law is very important. There needs to be transparency in an organization, but records that specifically allow people to target an individual, go after them and their family, or fuel the flames of that fire, that's what we're concerned about. There needs to be a balance between personal safety but also the transparency that we all enjoy. So those are my comments, and I'll now pass off to Nancy Higgins. Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker and committee members. My name is Nancy Hagwood. I'm the director of the Oregon National Primate Research Center, and I'm also an AIDS researcher. I've been a researcher for more than 30 years, and I have had continuous funding from the National Institutes of Health and currently the Gates Foundation for this research. I want to talk to you a little bit about our center in the next few minutes to tell you what we do, how we're regulated, and why we think that this law is something that is very helpful to us and we would like to retain it. The Oregon National Primate Research Center is one of the eight centers in the United States that serve the national needs particularly for non-human primate models. The goal is to advance human and animal health. And our center has three strong areas. One is neuroscience, another is reproductive health, including looking at ways to prevent the premature birth of children, and finally infectious disease. And this is our largest growing area. We have very large vaccine efforts, including those in AIDS, as well as some of the emerging bioterrorism issues and tuberculosis, West Nile virus, and yellow fever, for examples. We are very supportive, as I mentioned, of House Bill 3094. We believe that it strikes a balance between providing transparency about the research we do and disconnecting the names of researchers from the specific issues of animal care, which you've heard from Jim Newman and our previous speakers. We think that it's these details that are fueling the fires and starting these illegal campaigns that Jim was referring to. So before I turn to the example, I'd like to just mention three major ways in which we're regulated, and you're probably already familiar with these, but I just want to quickly go over these. The first and most comprehensive oversight is called the Animal Welfare Act. It's a large collection of federal laws that are updated regularly, and they cover animals cared for in this country. It's overseen by the USDA, Department of Agriculture, which conducts regular, unannounced inspections of our facility approximately twice a year. And if this organization, if the USDA finds us lacking, they can issue warnings, they can issue large fines in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, they can issue cease and desist orders, and they can confiscate animals, in a sense closing our facility. Fortunately, that has not happened with us. We have a long, clean record. The Animal Welfare Act also requires each institution to have a panel that oversees research. Our animal care the committee includes several animal experts and several scientists, and it also is required and does have at least one veterinarian and one person from the community who's unaffiliated with the research. We have that. This panel is charged with reviewing every single protocol, every single experiment that is proposed prior to the start of the research, and they often make suggestions for, in fact, they always make suggestions for changes, and these include the three R's: reduce, replace, and refine the research. This is to help us use the fewest number of animals, and I'm sure you're familiar with these points. And finally, we have another form of oversight. This is the guide for the care and use of laboratory animals, which you may or may not have seen, and I'm happy to pass this around if you'd like to see that. This is published by the National Institutes of Health, which oversees research supported by the NIH, and indeed our research is supported by them. So the core of the funding comes from the federal government, and the NIH conducts intensive reviews of us every 5 years and yearly reviews. We also have an external scientific advisory board that visits our center and inspects our scientific goals and our animal care. And in addition, something I'm very proud of, OHSU's Primate Center is voluntarily accredited by the International Association for the Assessment and Accreditation of Laboratory Animal Care, called ALAC. This accreditation we've held now for 33 uninterrupted years requires a very significant commitment and detailed inspections by international animal care experts every 3 years. And then each year we have to submit documentation that thoroughly demonstrates good care. So we feel that this oversight system works very well, and an example of that is the recent events. Last year, as Jim has pointed out, we've had a number of interruptions in our research, and last year the animal rights group PETA asked our Primate Center for a large number of documents through FOIA, which included animal records and any reports that we'd filed with the government. We provided these documents, and because PETA has launched past campaigns and because we'd had an infiltrator, we used the current law to redact the names of the staff. PETA reviewed these records and made a complaint to the USDA. The USDA did indeed what they should have, which was to conduct an investigation. They came another unannounced visit. They have full access to all of our information and have, of course, the names of the staff. And this investigation resulted in a warning letter for our Primate Center. I want to emphasize that when these events took place, our center took action, and the USDA complimented us on the actions that we took, and no further action was necessary. So we have a good partnership with the USDA, and the result of this warning letter coming into the public eye was reported by the Oregonian, and you have a copy of this story in your folders that you received today. We think that this series of events demonstrates nicely how organizations that are concerned about animals and research, such as PETA, can maintain access to the details about the research that they're looking for. But the names of the individuals, the ones that have been the fuel for harassment, threats, and illegal acts, have been disconnected. And I want to add a personal note that I'm here to support and speak for my colleagues who are not here today, those of whom who've been the subject of these harassments and this violence to their homes, to their families. And I strongly urge you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Chris Coleman. I'm the non-human primate behaviorist at the Oregon National Primate Research Center. I'm also a scientist, and I oversee our behavioral management unit. I'm one of 112 staff members that are dedicated to animal care at the Primate Center. The entire animal care staff includes 12 veterinarians, and Dr. C.J. Doan, our head veterinarian, is in the audience. We also have over 50 animal care technicians. One of our animal care supervisors, Kate Nolson, is also in the audience. And my unit, the behavioral services unit, has about 9 people, and our responsibility is to oversee the emotional well-being of the monkeys by providing them with opportunities to express normal behaviors, behaviors they might exhibit in the wild. Together with the veterinarians and the animal care staff and the other members of the Primate Center, we ensure the physical and emotional well-being for the primates in our care. We also regularly work with animal care records, which I understand is one of the most commonly requested items by animal extremist groups. These records are much like a person's medical records, except they're in much more detail because the animals live with us 24/7. And we record not everything that happens. We don't record the treats they get, the extra enrichment they get, but we record every time an animal is moved, every time an animal gets weighed, every time a veterinarian goes and gives an animal their annual exam or their annual dental exam, and like Jim had mentioned, every medication that the animal gets, either for illness or for research purposes, is recorded in those records. Because the records are so detailed and a lot of the terminology is very specific medical terminology, it's easy to see how these records can be taken out of context and some of the items within misused or intentionally misinterpreted. As Jim had mentioned earlier, there was a section that you saw on the slideshow about infants being cut away from their mothers, and as Jim had mentioned, that referred to a cesarean section that was done, performed the exact same way it would be, have been performed in a human. It's, it was done in a sterile operating room under the care of surgical veterinarians. The animals were anesthetized, and the mothers were given both pre- and post-operative pain medication, placed in an ICU. So it really occurred the same way it would for a human. But because of this, we can see how the animal rights extremists can use these records, specifically the names of researchers and the staff that are contained within these records, to fuel these very personal harassing campaigns. I actually live just a couple doors down from one of the researchers whose homes was harassed, and I saw the gang of protesters coming running from his house wearing ski masks, and we live in a residential area near school, near an elementary school, so it was somewhat disconcerting. This misuse of records is very disappointing and frustrating to those of us who spend so much of our time caring for the animals and are dedicated to the animals, and it's very frustrating knowing that our colleagues and our researchers can have these sorts of personal attacks because of that. Thank you for the for your time. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things about this bill is I think kind of the matter of degree is important in trying to figure out the balance. I was hoping maybe one of you could comment about what the Willamette Week wrote about this. And the last sentence of their short article says, but we think the identities of those public employees, like their work, should stay open to the public. Keeping researchers' names secret prevents reasonable activists from researching their work, past and present. And I guess let me preface it by saying that if you're a researcher and you're providing this work at OHSU, it would be of interest to me as a potential critic of that research if I knew what research you've done in the past. And I do think there's a fundamental difference between somebody who is an assistant working for $12 an hour and the head researcher there. But I was hoping maybe you could comment on how, where you think the line should be drawn.
Chair Barker, Representative Shields, I'd be happy to answer that question. As a researcher, perhaps you saw my website go by very quickly. We're very proud of what our researchers do, and we display that publicly. We have a brand new website as of last fall that clearly talks about exactly what we do. And in fact, we show and list our publications, our scientific publications, which describe in great detail exactly what we're doing. And we want people to know what our research is about. That's a story that is much easier to understand than individual records about where an animal has been moved to or when it received acetaminophen or whether it had a C-section or not. What's more important to us is that you understand and that we get a chance to tell you what's important about our research and why we are doing these experiments. And we feel that that method is a good one for doing that. We speak in schools to children about what we do. We are happy to speak to the public. We're happy to come back here at any time to talk with you and in any community forum about what we do at an individual level, at any detail you'd like to know. The issue here is it important for you to see in the animal records exactly what happened every single minute to that animal? If you wanted to get the records for all of my animals, you could get those today, and I'd be pleased for you to have them. But what I do not want to happen is to have every single person who was around those animals have their names displayed. That's not fair to them, in my view.
So I guess what I'm getting at is you've got those six, you know, the six top researchers on the website. Could the
bill, we have all the researchers,
all the researchers
on the website.
So could the bill be crafted in such a way as to leave the head researchers open, their names to be open? Because I'm not saying, let's say 10 years down the road you end up hiring a researcher and they've got a research study from 15 years back that, you know, it's not necessarily illegal, but it just maybe in a peer-reviewed journal it was criticized as not being very good. And if it does seem like there would be public interest in knowing who the researchers are, just their names, if not their home addresses.
And as Nancy said, all of the names of our researchers are on the website with descriptions of what. So basically, if we were to make those people exempt, it really, the bill is doesn't have any real need, because these are the number one targets for the extremists. Is their goal is to get these people to quit their jobs. Now, as for the ability to get information, all of the people you talk about, when you talk about past research, these people publish in peer-reviewed journals. So there's a lot of information about their past work. And we do believe that this example involving PETA is an excellent example of how things work. PETA is an organization that has specifically targeted researchers, placed names and pictures on their websites, basically with all the details, to basically say, go get them. And that's why we use the redaction with PETA. But the interesting thing is, PETA was able to get all of the details they wanted, a tremendous amount of detail about the information they wanted, give it to the organization that actually oversees us, that actually is our judge and jury, the USDA, and USDA took an action. What that does is keeps extremists from being the judge and jury, because that's not really their role. They're the role of their oversight agencies that oversee what we do and punish. And it's not. And basically, what some of the extremists are saying is, individuals go and be the judge and jury for this person.
So, let me clarify. So, the information about who is doing the names are available already. You're not redacting the names. You're just trying to keep the personal home information out. Is that?
Yeah, well, the names of our researchers at our primate center are known. That's on our website. When an extremist group asks for records, we redact the information you mentioned, the home address. We also redact the name of the researcher, because that's exactly what these animal rights groups do, is they take all of the very specific details of research and turn that into the gasoline to pour on the fire. We certainly wish that was not the case, but it is the case, and we see that at UCLA. We watch that very, very carefully, and at other institutions, is that connecting the name to the research details is what they use to go after these people.
Thank you. Representative Garrett.
Kind of along the same lines, it's been asserted by people who oppose the bill that because you make the names of the researchers available on the website, that this really won't do much to stop a committed activist from connecting the dots between the names of the researchers who you make available and the animal research records, which are also available, and that because of your voluntary activities in publicizing the names of the researchers, this may not accomplish very much. Do you want to?
I would disagree with that point of view, because, again, what's posted at our website is general details, and what the extremist groups really want are, what did you do specifically with this animal? And that's what they use as their flame. So, I mean, I think this actually is a demonstration of a nice balance, is that there is a lot of information on the web. Our own website, the NIH, also posts information about research. But we're talking about records, about specific protocols of research with animals, and as I demonstrated, the way that these pictures are painted to go and get these people. And if they don't have the name to connect to specific details, they can't do that as well. Certainly an extremist could park his car outside of our primate center and follow us home. We're not saying this bill does everything to protect us, but it certainly makes it harder for those extremists to do that sort of thing. And I would note that in the records that I provided to you there, it shows that we use the bill sparingly, but there are actually some organizations in there that are opposed to animal studies, but they are not the kind of organization that makes that posts somebody's picture on the web and gives details and says, basically, go get them. And we do provide information to those organizations, because they're not the bad actors. So we don't try to paint everybody with the same brush. There's a small group of people that use this in this way, and that's really what we're concerned about.
Yes, please. It just occurred to me, too. I know that it's not your intention to deprive information from legitimate outlets and news organizations, but that's not written into the bill.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a way we could make that clear?
I'll tell you how it's operated in the past, and I don't have any suggestion right away, but I agree, we have no intention. I head the press office. We have no intention of keeping reporters from information they need. And in fact, when we give the information to reporters, the way that we do it is we say, listen, here's the issue here. If you publish this piece of information in this way, it may put somebody at risk. We don't tell them they can't, but we give them the risk. And in no time has a newspaper reporter ever published something that has put people at additional risk, in my opinion. We simply alert them to the concern, and they have been very considerate in that and of course, understand the true risk there.
And this is not a new bill. I mean, we're talking about
that's
a new
right.
bill. And has it been working satisfactorily so far?
We believe so. I can actually, I mean, the PETA example is a perfect example because, I don't want to point to one organization, but I've had a lot of experience working with PETA where they have specifically gone after research. We have had to go to the New York Times and Time Magazine to clear the name of a researcher who they painted in a false way, and that person received death threats. So when PETA came to us with a records request, being able to disconnect the names in this most recent event, if they would have had that information, it would have been a continuation of, here's a person that's evil, go get them. They don't say go get them, but if you put somebody's picture at their website, you tell them evil that they're evil, that they did things without giving all the context, it's essentially saying go get them.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions to this panel? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Mary Botkin and Brian Boehringer, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Brian Boehringer, Director of Government Relations for OHSU. I'm just stepping up to clarify the amendments real quick and let everyone know that the Dash 1 amendment is the extension of the sunset. And the bill was inadvertently printed without a sunset, and we would like to get the current law extended. It's currently a bill that includes the current law has a four-year sunset, and so we'd ask for the original bill with a four-year sunset. We've also been asked to just mention the Dash 2 amendments. We've just now seen those, but we've had discussions with the ACLU in the past trying to find a way to, I think, address everyone's issues. And this is fundamentally, I think, what Mr. Newman was saying, is that disconnecting the name off of the record while the names are still available, you know, more generally so that you know who those people are and you can request those records, but disconnecting it out of the records so that we can sort of cool the fire, so to speak. So at this point in time, and like I said, just taking a quick look at the Dash 2s, we would not support the Dash 2s.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mary Botkin, and I'm here representing the American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees. And we actually represent the folks who are not researchers at the Primate Center. We represent a lot of the animal technicians and the folks who work with the animals and help provide the care. We are here in support of 3094 because it makes sense to us, as it has in many other areas, to continue to keep home addresses off the public records for individuals who, because of their job, can be at risk. And we've done that. I mean, we have supported that for DAs and judges and corrections officers and police officers, many public safety officials. And this issue did not really come to the forefront until the last few years for us. And with the attacks on people's homes and in their neighborhoods and their personal property, it became more and more clear to us that this really was sort of a form of domestic terrorism that we could not, as an organization, support. We understand the power and the validity of protest and differences of opinion. And we think that there is an appropriate way to do that that does not terrorize the children or the family members of the individual that you are cranky with. And the way you do that is you provide a systematic process by which people can offer legitimate law-abiding protest in a way that does not seep into a person's private life. Trying to force our researchers to quit their jobs by throwing acid on their car or painting their homes or other forms of direct action is, in our opinion, detrimental to the health and welfare of folks who benefit directly from the research being performed. We are not testing hairspray. This is important research that is life-saving. And if you have a question, ask someone who is living with AIDS about the importance of the research that folks who test the drugs for AIDS on the primates. You know, we can argue all day long about whether there's a better way, but I don't know of one. And as someone who has lived with multiple sclerosis for many years, I want to thank all the animals in their past that have made it possible for me to take drugs today that were tested and worked on by researchers across this country. You know, it is important work that they do. This is not superfluous work. It is not, it is critical what they're doing. And we just can never support people having access, easy access to their home addresses so that they can visit them at home or in their neighborhoods. It just doesn't make any sense to us. And for our members and for the people that we work with, we would encourage you to pass the bill. And we have not looked, I just got the amendment, so I will support whatever OHSU wants on their amendments, on the amendments. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you.
There it is. Andrea Meyer, Tom Gallagher, and Matt Russell.
Chair, members of the committee, I guess I'll start in terms of brevity.
Thank you.
Tom Gallagher, representing the Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association. We did support this exemption to the public records bill 4 years ago and do basically support it again. This is exactly the kind of a compelling reason why we think public records should be exempt, that when people go through this kind of illegal activity, they do need some protections. This gives me another opportunity to talk about how difficult this public records bill is, and again, this is not exactly germane to the bill. It's germane to the process, which you all are going through on a number of public records bill. OHSU has always taken the option under 501, 192.501, to release all of the public records to the press. And we never come in and request that. A public records request is a public records request, and we don't really see the police or the press having, you know, special access like the courts and others would to records for particular reasons. So that's not something that we appreciate it when we get it, but it's not something we think it should be part of the public records. But I do point out that it is permissible under 501 and not permissible under 502. The other thing I want to comment on here is where certain types of records are made available in one form but not in another. 2 years ago, 4 years ago when we supported this, I was fine with the whole bill. This time we've taken a look at it and have a question. Home addresses, I agree with, and these attacks on the home are one thing. And there are certain people who are publicly names and identification of where they work and business addresses are made as part of their academic background. I'm not talking about the people who supply animal feed and who clean out the cages and so forth. I'm talking about the academics who do the work on this. And I think maybe that the amendments might go, because it has home addresses and others, might go a little too far here. But I don't understand how we're going to make the distinction of exempting a public, a piece of information in a public records request when it is generally made public by the same institution in some other point. I've talked with the representative of OHSU about this, and I know some of my colleagues here have done the same thing. We're not quite sure how to shape that, but I think that there is a difference here between the genuine individuals who are not involved in any kind of public exposure and those people who do, who I know. And I'll leave you with this and answer the question. If I'm a known researcher, I have a journal, I'm known to be working at the Health Sciences Center, and you don't want to release my name because it's on the particular list of this animal, why can't I be attached to that anyway? Why can't I be alleged to have done that? Why isn't there just as much misinformation that goes out in that case as it would be on the other? Because even a criminal can put in many cases two and two together. So I'm supportive of the bill, and I guess I do have one last thing. The Oregon public newspaper publishers have seen no need to put a sunset back in this bill. I mean, if this ever goes away, I fully expect the people we've worked with so well at the Health Sciences Center to come forward and say we no longer need this. We shouldn't have to go through this every few years, just as a matter of course. So thank you for your time.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, Andrea Meyer, legislative director for the ACLU of Oregon. I am here again today to oppose House Bill 3094 because of the restrictions on the public record. Let me say a few things at the outset. ACLU does not support or in any way encourage or think that this law is a tool, should be a tool for criminal activity. There are those out there who engage in illegal activities, and those are not the folks that we are trying to protect in terms of our public record. But we do have a public record that used to be quite a one that was touted across the country as providing full sunshine. And I will walk through the documents I've provided in my testimony, but I first want to quote from the Attorney General's manual. It states, interested persons, news media representatives, business people seeking access for personal gain, busybodies on fishing expeditions, persons seeking to embarrass government agencies, and scientific researchers all stand on an equal footing. And yet you've heard here today that apparently under this law, the press stands on one footing and the rest stand on another. That, as Mr. Gallagher pointed out, is not the way the law is written. Legislators, many of you probably seek records from public agencies, and you may take to the floor or you may hold a press conference in to criticize the agency. It may be foster children. It may be another area. It may be asserted against you that you are spreading misinformation, that the way you've taken that information or how you're presenting it is wrong. And often that's in the eye of the beholder of the other side. Usually we think it's misinformation when it's about our organization and it's not quite accurate. But again, that is not the basis for the public record standard. OHSU is engaging in selective disclosure and are withholding records for those engaged in lawful speech. Let me be clear about something else. We have never opposed the home address exemption. I believe, and I've testified before, that there's other law already in the statute that protects those folks. And so any discussion we have, and I bring before you today, does not include concerns about the home address. The material I've given you, as you've now heard, and OHSU has indicated, they do display the photographs of the researchers on their web. I took an example. I could have gone on and on and on, but you'll just see quickly in my written material a photo display, again, then a second one with leadership describing the work they do and the many scientists that they have, all of which can be linked. With all due respect, and I think there is significant concern for safety issues, especially at the home, maybe I can only speak for myself, but I would not want my photograph up on a website. In fact, I make sure that there is no photograph of me up on the ACLU of Oregon website, and if press ever asks me for one, I do not give it. I do not want my photograph out there, although it is out there as we speak. You know, those same researchers with their names and their faces on the website are having their names redacted from some of the documents, and we just don't think that's appropriate. OHSU has, again, they said they allow it to the press. You'll see in my documents that that actually has not always been true. They do pick and choose, I think, the media. And I attached to my testimony May 19, 2003. It is a little old, but it still is relatively within the current times. A letter from the Willamette Week, as well as the first page, but I didn't provide the whole document, of the story they did regarding monkeys. The news editor at that time provided, and I only quote a little bit, In our extensive reporting on OHSU's primate research, we found that almost every request for public records was met with delay and denial. On several occasions, we found it necessary to involve our lawyers in the process to get what were clearly public records. The reason for their resistance became obvious once we finally got the records. They showed that both internally and externally, there were scientists who were questioning how the monkeys were being treated. I also attached the last document is one sheet from the material again provided by OHSU, similar to what you received today, but this one was provided 4 years ago, kind of their list of who gets and what happens. And I note that the first entry regarding PETA, the reason the record was denied is because, I quote, in the past, PETA has spread damaging but false information about OHSU animal care. None of us want false information spread about us or damaging information, but that is the risk and part of the public record, and we cannot pick and choose because we do not like what someone is saying about us. As I've indicated, the records request has shown in the past abuse of monkeys. In addition, watchdog groups have exposed issues when an animal shelter was selling animals to the research facilities. That's important sunshine. And we've seen a lot of sunshine by organizations, including IDA, next to me, who have brought forward important things that the community needs to know. I did all have the dash twos prepared. I have not really read them. I will say two things about them. One, again, I will reiterate, home address is not something we seek to have released. Number two, these amendments make me very nervous, I have to say, and while they address a piece of the problem here, knowing who the veterinarians are, knowing who others are to connect the dots, to understand the research is important. It has been important and it is important. And so to the degree that this will still limit in ways that we think are inappropriate, we have concerns. I appreciate the opportunity to testify, and I am happy to answer any questions, but we take this issue very seriously, as I know you do, and while it is a renewal of a law already in place, I hope we can have a meaningful discussion about whether it's really the right piece at the right time in light of our public records requirements. Thank you.
Please go ahead.
Hi, my name is Matt Rozell. Chair Barker and members of the committee, I want to thank you for the opportunity to voice concern over the clear detriment to the public interest and a weakening of Oregon public records law that is going to definitely result.
Could I ask you if you could summarize that? We have your written testimony. We can read it just in the interest of time, but I want you to have be able to say everything you
I'll
want.
Just go on the record that in defense of animals as opposed to this bill, this is going to has negatively affected our work as a watchdog organization. I have some really clear examples in our 25 years how we have been in the public interest. Our activities in getting public documents and disseminating them has been well established. In through all kinds of agencies where we seek documents, including the USDA, NIH, FDA, and so on. A recent federal lawsuit, a judge, when asked for a public fee waiver, made it very clear that IDA was within their public rights and to the benefit of the public interest to get documents. We've filed numerous complaints and reports that have, in fact, led to changes that have benefited both those agencies that we are reporting on and the animals and the employees within those agencies. I would like to emphasize that we are a peaceful organization. We're a lawful watchdog of the public interest. Some comments were made earlier that we unfurled an ALF banner at a demonstration. That is patently false. I would just like to say that when you have a public demonstration and you invite people from the public to attend on a public sidewalk, it's very difficult to know who's going to attend and what they're going to do and say. We do everything we can to control the message, but we very much are supportive of peaceful free speech. We certainly do not support any of this illegal or harassment type of behavior in any way whatsoever. We just feel very strongly that this bill is going to do nothing to stop that, and it's only going to hinder the efforts of legitimate advocacy groups like ours. And I'm going to go into some details about that. First of all, it's going to fail to protect OHSU employees because of the fact that they publish their own researchers' names on their website, which has already been clearly said, but also because the National Institute of Health has a database of extramural research grants. In other words, if OHSU decided tomorrow that in order to protect their employees, they would take all of those names off their website, there is still a public database that's very well known that you can cross-reference and get names of all the researchers from public-funded research facilities. And so it's out there in the public domain. These names already exist. IDA has no interest in getting home addresses. In fact, when we have received them inadvertently, we redact them before we release that information. We protect everyone's right to be private in their own homes. This is how it's going to hinder our ability to do our work specifically. When we get detailed information such as necropsy reports, health histories, daily care logs, behavioral records, etc., from these labs, we need to review and analyze if there are violations of law. Without the names of those researchers, we are unable to match federal grant awards to approved protocols and animal care records obtained through Oregon public records laws. We can't connect the dots. It's like having this puzzle that you can't put anything together. We need to be able to know who's doing that research. A recent example, specific example of this at OHSU, is that in 1998, our organization made a large document request to OHSU. It took us 8 years to get that request, and we had to hire an attorney. We were forced to file a lawsuit. This is very common with OHSU. It is very difficult to get records from them and many of these other federally funded labs. So we were forced to file a lawsuit to get the records. And in 2004, the Multnomah County Circuit Court of Appeals, Judge David Jernant, he said, in effect, this, or specifically, in sum on this record, neither amount. This was the court was about how much it was going to cost to get these records. The judge finally said, neither the $12,585.40 and the approximately $151,000 as assessed fees by OHSU was reasonable. They ruled in our favor. Finally, in 2006, 8 years later, we got the documents. It's important to note that the 113,000 pages of documents that we got was in hard copy rather than electronically, which would have made it vastly, enormously easier to review the data. And I can give you a letter from our attorney that will detail how OHSU basically charged to the tune of $20,000 extra expense. They gave us paper documents instead of electronic documents. This is an example of how much OHSU tries to thwart organizations like ours from really being able to utilize this information. This particular records request was for health records, for behavioral records. All the names of the players, the veterinarians, the researchers have been redacted. And so the idea was to cast a broad net, to look at all the monkey records, all the health records, all of the behavior records, and try to draw comparisons, find out if there are, violations of law. And if so, who is conducting those violations of law? We can't do that with this document request. And it's a very clear example of how this law has hindered our work. I want to also mention that, I personally worked for OHSU as a primate technician for 2 years. That's what led me to this job at In Defense of Animals. And I know firsthand from being within their own labs and working with those monkeys and seeing myself the violations of law, the inhumane care of those animals, I know how important it is and how difficult it is for this information to get out to the public. Since 2000, when I left the lab, the work that I have done has done a lot to benefit those animals and those employees and OHSU. They have done a far better job of caring for animals. They claim since that time they have pair housed 75% of those animals. That was a direct result of my work. And so it's just when light is shined on these organizations, they do better with our public money. There's just no doubt about it. So I want you to please consider the greater public interest here and the serious detrimental consequences to weakening this public records law. And if I could comment on a couple of things that were said in OHSU's testimony that I'd like to refute. When the director talked about the oversight, I'd like to say that when I left the Primate Center in 2000, the USDA inspector at the time, Dr. Isis Johnson Brown, quit in frustration because she was not being supported by her own supervisors to uphold the bare minimum standards that are withheld in the Animal Welfare Act. Most of the regulations that she mentioned are the fox watching the hen house. The Institutional Animal Care and Use Committee, it's people made up of employees of that institution. It's been highly criticized among peers throughout the whole system. The ALAC accreditation, also internal review. It's the agency policing themselves. And so it is only when outside watchdog organizations are able to get this information that we really know what's happening inside of these places. Justin Goodman, who works for People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, he regrets that he couldn't be here today, but he actually cites the very same conclusions that OHSU cites as an example of how this law is working effectively. Justin Goodman of PETA says the exact opposite. He says that even though they were able to get those documents, the fact that they didn't have the names of the researchers was very detrimental. They have no way of knowing whether these particular public employees have violated the law in the past, he says. We will have no way of linking any future violations to these individuals, and we have no way to know if they still work there. And if they don't, we have no idea of how to track them at the next institution that they might move to work at. So, this law is simply not working in the public interest, and it's not protecting these OHSU researchers. And I really hope that you would consider not passing this law. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. Any questions first? Thank you.
Thank you.
Close the public hearing on House Bill 1594 and open a works. We're not hearing House Bill 2727 today. It's been pulled off the agenda. We're back to House Bill 3171. Open a public hearing.
House Bill 3171 limits deferrals of jury duty to one time unless the deferral is sought for a specified emergency that could not have been anticipated when the original deferral was granted. It requires an employer to allow an employee to take leave without pay for time spent responding to summons for jury duty and prohibits an employer from requiring an employee to use vacation or sick leave for jury duty. We do not yet have the fiscal impact statement on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And committee members, my name is Andy Olson. I'm state representative out of House District 15 in the Albany area. This is a good common sense bill. Basically, what it does is it gives the authority to a judge to say no to deferrals for jury duty. That's basically what it does. And you do have problems where when you have courts that run out of jurors, and one of the very first things that they end up doing is closing down your civil cases. So, and they have to be postponed and rescheduled. So I would urge you to move this bill forward and give that authority to judges.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative. I think everyone here knows that I love and care about the jury system in the state, arguably as much as anyone. I truly believe it's the most vibrant institution of democracy in this country. And while the underlying policy is great, I support it. I'm wondering if it is the business of this legislature to essentially micromanage county by county what has already been. The judges already have the authority to do this. I don't think we need it to delegate. Essentially, we're micromanaging policy, I'm concerned with, on a county by county basis.
Are you in response?
Yeah, I'm.
Okay, Mr. Chair, Representative Barton. Yeah, I understand what you're saying. What this does is just basically set policy clear. for what the problem is. I mean, out there right now.
I know, for example, in Lane County, they famously had it. They literally had to go out and, as the chairman just said, Shanghai jurors. And clearly, like, for example, a policy like this would be entirely appropriate in Lane County, whereas other counties, it might actually behoove them to have a more permissive policy. They might work perfectly well for them. I'm just wondering, again, to the extent I have an issue, it's just whether or not this legislature should dictate that policy, or whether or not we should allow the presiding judge to do it.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? Representative Cameron.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Olson. I just want to be clear that if there was a legislator who had been called to jury duty, for example, in March,
yes,
and asked to be put off until July, and that request was granted till July, and let's say, for example, the legislature had to go longer than July or longer than June 30th, even though the rule says we can always change our rules.
Morning camping.
Would he have to or she have to come under number three? This next time when he sends in his request or her request for extension, would it be now I have to provide 10 dates within the next 6 months that I would be available and that would allow me to be excused? Is that the way I read the bill?
I think, Mr. Chair and Representative Cameron, I believe that's correct in what you're trying to share there. But I can tell you, too, I mean, I've already been called in the last couple sessions to have to testify in trials over the years. And I've just, rather than try to defer it, I've just gone ahead and attended. I think that's a civic duty that we have here. That's
okay. Thank you.
Stigler.
As I read this bill, it does one other thing as well, other than sort of set out the parameters by which a deferral occurs, and that is to make it very clear that a citizen who dutifully exercises their obligation as a citizen can't be penalized by their employer for doing so, essentially, that, i.e., they can't be forced to take vacation leave, sick leave, those kind of things. Is that, I mean, that's part of your intent as well as to...
Yes.
Okay. So it's really a twofold. I mean, there are two things you're accomplishing here.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Andy, we were called back into five special sessions in 2001. We could very well come back real soon. So if you took a deferral now and didn't go, they put you off of a one-day trial. All of a sudden, some date comes, and you've got 30, 40, 60 days tied up in a major case, and you're there every day through the entire session. I would be concerned for certain type of people that might get involved in that type of situation. Legislators, I don't know who else, but it would be rather, I mean, how do you comply with this if you only get the one deferral, and you've got to give dates?
Well, you know, Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, there is an exception to that, and Representative Cameron referred to that. And again, the courts are going to take into consideration, and from my experience, of what, you know, the situation you're involved in and what the length of the time of a trial would be, how long you need to be there specifically, you know, and utilize you the best they can for your testimony.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
If I may, it might be covered, Representative, it might be covered under line 18, a natural disaster or a national emergency.
Thank you, Representative Olson.
I don't know what's natural.
Tom Holt, yeah. Please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Tom Holt here today on behalf of the Oregon Liability Reform Coalition. I think Representative Olson has sort of explained the very basic nuts and bolts of the bill. It's pretty straightforward. Essentially, it says you still get one deferment like you do now for just about any reason. And the second time around, what we're saying as a matter of public policy for the state is you get to make an appointment to come back. And the other piece is to clarify, as Representative Stiegler pointed out, that one cannot be penalized by being forced to use your vacation or sick leave for serving on a jury. In answer to a couple of the questions that were raised, I would just point out, you know, line 20, some other extreme emergency is certainly open to lots of interpretation by a clerk of the court. That's intentional so that, you know, if one of you were called back into another special session, you know, that would, you know, those are called for emergencies. So there's room for clerks to be reasonable, but at the same time, it's making a very clear public policy statement by the legislature that, hey, jury service is important. Everyone has an obligation. If you get called, we expect you to serve at some point. That's the point of the bill. And with that, I'd be happy to take questions.
Karen.
Throwing this out for consideration. Maybe one way to deal with the question is whether the phrase some other extreme emergency is going to mean everything that we might want it to mean, like if we get called into special session. And under rules of statutory interpretation, a judge reviewing that would try and define extreme emergency by looking to what other the rest of that paragraph and looking at what kinds of grounds are legitimate for getting out. And one is death, one is serious illness, and one is a natural disaster or national emergency. So if a judge is going to define extreme emergency, it would be with reference to those other things. So we might want to broaden it and just say, you know, other good cause shown that could not have been anticipated in advance. That might be a way through this.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to echo Representative Garrett's insightful comments.
Representative Stever.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Holt, I'm assuming that part of your support in this is, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, is to support some kind of standard threshold criteria across this state so that there's at least, you know, some standard area that that courts are operating within.
Yeah. Chair Barker, Representative Stiegler, exactly. Everyone would know what the rules of the road are.
Thank you. Representative Krieger.
In rural areas, where I am, for instance, it's 75 miles one way to a hospital. A doctor gets called. He uses one excuse. He goes in, he's serving. A call comes in at the hospital while he's serving on the jury. I mean, he got the one. He was out. Now he's actually at the courthouse. What do you do with him? You got a guy on a slab and he's bleeding two blocks from the courthouse.
Chair Barker, Representative Krieger, not being a physician, but I would say that would certainly qualify in a sort of a layman's view as being an emergency situation. You have life at stake.
So you would shut the jury down, the trial, or you excuse him as a juror at that time?
I would think that would be up to the court how they handle that. My understanding is that there are often people held in reserve to, you know, take someone's place, but the juror would be excused, I would think.
Any further questions? Thank you.
Yeah. If I may, Mr. Chair, yes. I mean, we'd be open to the suggestion that Representative Garrett made in terms of, you know, having something a little broader, you know, in the particular language of the bill, just the intent.
Okay. That'd be great. Thank you, Mr. Holden. And I just want to remind people that are in the room and working on any bills, number 17 on the committee rules is proposed amendments by other than members of the Legislative Assembly must be submitted in writing to committee staff at least 48 hours prior to the work session in which they are to be considered. We're getting amendments showing up the same day we're not ready for, so it's slowing things up. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate your offering up on that. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3171. Open a work session on House Bill 2313.
House Bill 2313 was first heard in January 27. Clarifies several statutes relating to trusts and estates, changes the language of a trust to a trustee of a trust and an estate to a person representative of an estate. There are now, I believe, three amendments before the committee, which clarify, I think, some of the unintended cross-references that were in the original bill. And I believe Susan Graby is here to discuss the dash threes. We do have the No, maybe I may have spoken too soon. Actually, we do not yet have the fiscal on this, so we can only discuss whether to adopt.
Okay. Please go ahead. Identify yourself for the record.
Scott McEwen, here for representing the Oregon State Bar, the Legislative Committee of the Real Estate Section of the Bar. And I don't have prepared comments. I'm just here to available to answer questions.
Okay.
Mr. McEwen, if I may, I seem to recall that back on January 27th, when we initially discussed this bill, that some members of other sections of the bar came in, and their concerns were that by changing the definition of trusts and estates in the way, or in cross-referencing the statutes in the way the original bill did, that there were going to be unintended consequences for DEQ and other environmental sections, and there were just other unintended consequences. Can you please address that and how the Dash 3s may or may not be addressing that?
Yes. Sure. Parker, counsel. Not other sections of the bar, but individual agencies have come forward, and in the interest of time, rather than trying to deal with the agencies, this time we have proposed eliminating sections that concerns were raised by the Department of Business and Consumer Services, Department of the Insurance Division, Department of Environmental Quality, and that's it.
Okay, any questions about the Dash 3s?
Have those agencies seen, then, the Dash 3 amendments?
We have eliminated the sections that dealt with any subject that they raised. Specifically, Section 4, by the at the request of the Department of Business and Consumer Services. Section 31, at the request of the State Lottery. 41, at the request of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. Section 42, at the request of the Insurance Division. And Sections 28 to 30 and 33 to 37, the request of the DEQ.
Further questions? Thank you, Mr. Holt. We can't work the bill today because we don't have fiscal. We can't adopt the Dash 3s. To adopt the Dash 3s?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wisnant.
I move the Dash 3s in the 2313.
Thank you, Representative Wisnant. Representative Wisnant moves the Dash 3s in 2313. Will they be adopted? Is there any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. And close the work session on House Bill 2313. And open a work session on House Bill 2789.
House Bill 2789, first heard on March 19th, clarified the definition of parole and probation officers. Amendment provided that retired parole and probation officers were exempt from being prosecuted for unlawful possession of a firearm. The Dash 1 amendment was adopted back on the 19th.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There was a minimal fiscal impact, so no statement was issued.
So it's ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
One's in it.
The Dash 1's already in. We were just waiting for the fiscal and it came back. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wisnant.
I move House Bill 2789 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Wisnant moves House Bill 2789 to the floor with a due pass.
As amended.
As amended. Is there any discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Barton.
Aye.
Representative Cameron.
Aye.
Representative Garrett.
Aye.
Representative Krieger.
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Shields?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stiegler?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnant?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye. Motion carries. Who would like to carry that bill? Representative Shields, thank you. No further business before the committee today? Thank you, members. Meeting adjourned.